It is useful at times to hear some information, not only about how to practice, but also about what we might see. Things we might understand. And ways we might relate to that. So, the discussion around noticing the impermanent, unreliable nature of experience and feeling fear or confusion or anxiety, useful to kind of lay the terrain out that that happens and that it's not unique to any one person. There are patterns and things that seem to be happen for people as they walk this path, and also patterns that are common for us in how we get caught. And so it's useful to hear this. Partly because then that information, that information can go in conceptually and then support us while we just connect with experience in a simple way. But the practice itself is fundamentally so simple. And I think it's worth remembering that. At one point, I framed a reframed a teaching from Sayadaw in my mind with my own words. So, the meditating mind is simple. That's Sayadaw's language. Meditating mind is simple, not complicated. If it's complicated, it's an object, it's just something to know. Complication is happening. So, anytime I found myself kind of getting hooked into thoughts of, like, even practice thoughts, and if I'm in the complicated exploration of, and how does this map on to dependent origination, or is this an experience of not self? It's like, well, there's complication arising. That's just thinking arising about concepts of the practice. So complication is arising. The meditating mind is simple. If it's complicated, it's an object, just something else to pay attention to, just something else to know that's happening in experience. It can take some courage to trust the simplicity of mindfulness, the simplicity of this kind of meeting of experience. I see that my internet connection is unstable. Are you hearing me okay? Hopefully it will be okay. It can be challenging to trust the simplicity of this practice. We have such a habit of thinking we have to do and figure out and plan and make things happen, to trust that a simple awareness of this and noticing the relationship, is there wanting something to happen, a pushing away, a confusion, a belief around what's happening? Is that simple noticing? It can be challenging to trust that that actually is transformative, actually does help our system to understand how our minds get caught in suffering and how our minds can move to freedom. And yet, maybe we each can remember or touch into some time when we have trusted or seen the wisdom of the practice and how it's freed the mind, even for a moment. We might have tasted something different. In my own experience, the moments when the mind understands something. It seems so simple and so obvious. It's like, how could I not have seen this? How could I not have seen that, like, craving is suffering? How could I not have seen that? It's so obvious. And then, you know, an hour later, the mind is craving and not, it's not clear. It's not clear that the mind should let go of it, because the craving is the belief of craving that I need to do this in order to be happy is functioning. It's operating. And yet, having seen that truth, having seen that experience, sometimes we might not trust that. It's like, sometimes I've seen in my practice that I must not have seen that. It must, you know, when I'm caught in that delusion of I need to have something in order to be happy, remembering back to the understanding of the freedom that was there when the mind let go of it. It's like, I might doubt that. I might doubt that seeing. But over time, we do begin to trust this path, this simple kind of awareness helps the mind more and more to have the information it needs to let go of those habits and patterns that lead us towards suffering. I described that the other day as a kind of a natural process that, as the mind gets the information about patterns and habits, habitual habits and patterns being stress or suffering, since our system inherently wants to move in the direction of well-being, our system begins to figure out how to let go of that suffering. I remember sometimes sitting in the meditation hall and experiencing the screaming, you know, pain of aversion, and like just knowing that it would be helpful to let go, but having no clue how to do that. No, we can't do the letting go. Wisdom has to do the letting go. And sometimes when we're sitting in that place of just seeing the suffering, it's like that's what the system needs to learn in that moment. This is dukkha. This pushing away of not wanting things to be the way they are, this is suffering. And that's what the system needs to learn. And at the point when it understands how to let go, it will let go. But we usually can't do the letting go. Sometimes we can incline in that direction, and sometimes it feels like we can let go. Sometimes it feels like we can shift our attention or just recognize or see, oh yeah, I don't need to do that. And it feels like we're letting go. My sense of that is that the wisdom is close enough to the surface that it's accessible to us and can be touched into by kind of remembering it or inclining towards it. The practice is valuable. The practice supports this movement to freedom, and appreciating the value of the practice. I think I said this the other day, but it's worth repeating. You know, Saito said, if we really understood how valuable this practice was, we wouldn't stop practicing. But we forget. We forget all the time how valuable it is. And so the mind wanders. And so losing touch with that is kind of like we've lost touch with the value also, lost touch with it. And so reminding ourselves sometimes of the value of practice can support the inclination towards the simplicity of just being here with our experience. And sometimes, as I've said over and over, the simplicity of just being with experience, the momentum of whatever the habit or pattern is stronger than the capacity to be mindful in that moment. And so we do. It's useful to have a kind of a tool chest of things that we can bring in That makes it a little more complicated in some ways. You know, it's like, what tool should I use? Well, just use whatever tool feels the most resonant for you in that moment. So, a few questions from earlier. And a couple of questions about working with challenging patterns and emotions that came in some days ago that I wanted to just touch in on. And fundamentally, with this, somebody asked the question, you know, I mention anger a lot. I use it a lot in examples because that's been a big, two big habits and patterns of mine, anger and self-hatred. And so a lot of my examples do kind of revolve around those. And yet the tools that this practice offers are pretty general. And so when I talk about the tools for working with anger, the same tools can be used for working with confusion or fear. Somebody explicitly said that. Can I just like substitute fear in my mind when you're talking about anger and learn something? And in general, I'd say yes. There's some specific things, and so just a couple of specific things to mention about fear, about confusion. Those were two kind of questions that came up with some specific for some specificity around support for working with those. So with fear, I think one of the interesting things about fear that may be slightly different than anger is, I mean, the basic quality of anger is a lashing out, and often we have a sense of kind of an object of the anger. We know what we're angry at in some ways, although, you know, when we look into our minds, what is the actual reaction to? Sometimes I've been surprised. And so with fear, I'd say there's more, often more kind of uncertainty or not non-clarity about what we're actually afraid of. So that's a useful exploration. There's different kinds of fear. There's a primal fear, which I would say is kind of just the fear that happens when there's an immediate threat in the present moment that's clear and present danger, a rattlesnake in front of you. My experience at one point at Spirit Rock, I was walking on a path at dusk and I went to step over a crack in the sidewalk and it turned out to be a baby rattlesnake. And the snake, I realized it was a rattlesnake when it curled up and started, you know, rattling and shaking its tail. And I froze. I mean, it's like the system that there was clear awareness, there was fear there, and the mind was really present in that moment. You know, so I think in some ways that kind of fear brings us right into the present moment. My body froze and stopped. And then slowly backed away. You know, I just watched myself do that. Watch the response in the body, very present for that. Other times I've heard colleagues describing times that they had fear. You know, one person in a car accident, the moments in a car accident, just the fear and the complete presence of mind to know exactly what was going on. It was like seared into her memory, every single moment that happened. And so that kind of fear can take us right into the present moment, that kind of fear where there's something right here present. It also can put us into a freeze state where we don't quite know what to do, but also we may be very present in that freeze state. But much of our fear and the reactions that we have is more relating to thoughts about something that might happen. So two flavors of this and useful potentially to just be curious about, you know, what's actually going on around the fear. With fear, I think of fear as being connected to something that might happen in the future, but fear usually related to something that we're envisioning a particular scenario or particular possibility. Well, if that happens, fear arises based on a particular scenario. And so, noticing that the fear is arising in relationship to an idea. Often that's what fears have is happening with fear. It's rising in relationship to an idea. So what's the idea that fear is connected to? And then curiosity around that relationship between the idea, the thought, and the experience of fear. Another flavor that we often might call fear, or that might be in the terrain of fear, is anxiety, which I think of as distress around the future. Again, it's future related. It's related to something that hasn't happened yet, this kind of experience. But it is often, anxiety is often connected to uncertainty of not knowing what's going to happen. So that, again, noticing the kind of thought that seems to be a useful place to explore, seeing what actually is it that the fear is connected to. And when you see it, then that becomes a piece. Often we have the fear and we don't really clearly understand or know what it is that we're fearful of. The anxiety of being distressed about the uncertainty, just recognizing that uncertainty, and again, perhaps recognizing, yep, that's true. It is true. The uncertainty is true. The things we've talked about working with that. And I'd say that in general, the tools for working with all reactive emotions, some very similar tools here. Noticing the experience. How does it affect the body? What's the kind of broader state around it? The exploration we did yesterday on the content of the situation with the broad feeling. How do they connect? That can be a really useful place to explore. Whatever kind of reactivity or struggle or stress is happening. How does the stress connect to the situation that the stress is connected to? So all of those tools that we've talked about are more generally supportive. And then some exploration of confusion, another question that came up. Again, I think the broader exploration that we've talked about all applies. There's some qualities of confusion that can be useful to kind of point to. I mean, there are different flavors of the quality of the experience as a whole, in anger, for instance, in fear, in confusion. I'd say in anger, the broader experience is kind of like a congealing of energy that's going to do something and is going to like want to get out and destroy or get revenge or something. So it's got that kind of flavor. The anger is kind of coalescing and congealing and heading in a particular direction. Confusion seems to have a kind of a quality of circling energy that doesn't land so clearly anywhere, kind of a broad state of jumpiness or scattered energy, something like that. So useful to kind of connect with the broader sense, again, the broader sense of the experience. Fear often kind of has the feeling of pull back, get me out of here. That's the kind of feeling I have with fear. It's like, get me out of here. Just like I want to, it's the wish to not exist in this situation, the craving for non-existence at times. Just get me out of here. So it can be useful to kind of touch in or recognize some of those flavors, those distinct flavors of each of these kind of qualities. Someone asked a question about noticing with anger. I talked about how I began to kind of be surprised that anger was suffering. And somebody pointed out that in their experience, I'll read this one. Your reflection on anger led me to reflect on my relationship with my experience of anger. I notice when I experience anger, I feel purposeful, solid, really real. I can feel my bounding heartbeat, vigorous breath, and clenched fist. It feels pleasant. It feels reliable. It feels like self. Often I like experiencing anger. How can awareness help me appreciate and understand the dukkha of experiencing anger? So I think in this case, what you're noticing really is, you know, something that is connected to anger is the sense of agency, the sense of being in control, the sense of I've got some energy and I'm going to direct it to a purpose. So there's that side that sometimes comes with anger. And then there's also, I mean, so that sometimes the strength of that feeling, it may be that if you felt powerless in your life in the past, that the feeling of agency and the feeling of having power and control, that that's taking the foreground, because the sense of not having agency or not having control, maybe there's some history there. And so that may be the kind of predominant piece of the anger. I noticed for myself as I kind of got familiar with the experience of anger that in the split second that anger arose, just the first moments of its arising, it did have that quality for me too. Really pleasant. I'm here. I know what I want. I know I can do it. It just had that quality of control. There's some delusion in there because control is a delusion, but we like that delusion. We like that delusion. It feels good to think we're in control. And so that's a delusion piece of the anger, that sense of control, of agency, of I can do something, or the feeling of the power that comes with it. So that there's some delusion in there. Even the pointing to the, it feels like self, it feels like me. Yes, I have the power here. You know, so that there's some delusion there. And that sense of being in control, of having that sense of I can do something to make myself be safe and in charge, that feels good, because again, we don't like the feeling of not being in control. So that may be at the fore in the experience of anger of the person who wrote this question. So noticing all of that, you don't have to try to not feel all of that, kind of feel into that sense of the, you know, that arising of solidity that you talked about, you know, that real presence, feel into that, and then keep feeling. I mean, somebody just put a question about elements in here. Do the elements come into the exploration? They can, in the body. My own looking at the anger, what I began to feel in terms of the elemental nature of anger, aside from the kind of the broader sense of the power, the control, and the elemental feeling, there was a lot of pressure and tension and heat and contraction, and the clenched fists even. You know, the clenched fists. If you clench your fists for long enough, there's suffering there. It's painful to keep that held, keep that tightness held. And so the exploration of what is the physical sense connected with the experience. How is the body? Usually there is some kind of tension and holding in the body that there's a contraction there with anger that has a painful quality to it. And I would say just keep exploring too. You know, what you're noticing is the side of the experience of anger that is perhaps most relevant for you to understand right now. That feeling of being in control and the pleasantness of that. What is that about for you? What is that about for you?